So what does your body tell you this morning? Are you warm and dry enough and comfortable in your own skin? Or is there a sore spot, a tender place that calls to your attention? Maybe some parts are no longer working the way they used to. Maybe they never worked as they should. Maybe you feel anxious and on edge, and your body is taut like a string pulled to the breaking point by stress and anxiety. Maybe your energy is flagging. Or maybe you feel like dancing. Maybe life is bubbling up and through you. My guess, it's all here. All of this and more is present in the collection of bodies gathered here in this room today. My message this morning is simply that it is all good, all true. So if you need to close your eyes and take a nap now, you can go there. Take good care of yourself. Just don't snore and wake the person sitting next to you. The rest of us need to take a deep breath. Take a deep breath and dive into the meaning housed in these fragile, beautiful, and resilient bodies of truth. These bodies are the exact location of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That includes you. Everything starts there if you are human and living. Your body is your temple and the location of your thoughts, your feelings, and the track record of your life's experiences. That holy ground of dignity granted and worth known in our bones is our first principle for a good reason. And conversely, if that right to your own bodily integrity is denied, it feels like the world has stopped making sense. Our bodies can be, and too often are, colonized and controlled by others. Against their will, children are used and abused, and women are forced to carry unwanted pregnancies. The bodies of the young are especially vulnerable to the trauma inflicted upon them. The trauma of violence or the threats of a gun-loving culture that refuses to take steps to protect children and all people from gun violence only makes sense if you are willing to deny the worth of other people's lives. It makes sense if you are in love with your power over and control of others more than that basic human dignity of all. You have to believe in authoritarian control to use and abuse others, rather than simply respect their own rights to self-determination. And this power struggle, whether you call it patriarchy or white supremacy or any system of controlling others, is antithetical to our UU values. Any violation of that inherent worth and dignity is a violation of those cherished human rights we claim here and as well out far from our UU bubble. Our bodies know the truth of this dignity on a visceral level. We know the unwelcome intrusion, and if we are wise, we know our own boundaries and how to set them well. There are two current issues that I want to name and explore this morning because they demonstrate how troubling the denial of bodily integrity is. We are hearing these days from Catholic families seeking alternative religious communities because of the clergy's sexual abuse scandals rocking that ancient institution. The pattern of the abuse of children by trusted priests who were protected by the church is devastating. It robs children and families of their sense of safety and robs them of their faith. For the children who are victims, that abuse stays with them for a lifetime. Healing from it takes so much energy and alters their path permanently. The secrecy and lack of accountability of individual priests and the church hierarchy has left a devastating mark on all faith communities and adds to growing anti-clerical sentiments everywhere. As a parent, I also would have a hard time trusting my children to their care now. And as a minister, I'm devastated by the abuse done in the name of the church and the violation of ethics by those who are sworn to uphold them. Every time a clergy person misconduct occurs, it damages the integrity of our profession and our calling. This is just one example of the way that patriarchy upholds the oppressors and abandons its victims. In an anti-authoritarian faith such as ours, clergy are more human and more accountable too. We do not claim special powers bestowed by God that cannot be questioned here. I think you'll attest to that, right? My response to parents inquiring about what Unitarian Universalism is doing to prevent abuse is clear. We screen all adults who work with children. We practice a two-adult rule in any classroom and a six-month waiting period for any new folks to be known before they are working with children. And the ongoing supervision of all who work with children here is a critical aspect of our family ministry programs. While no system can be perfect, we do invest in doing everything we possibly can to protect the children in our care. Another critical aspect of that protection is education that teaches children to respect and honor their own bodies, as well as to respect and honor others in relationships. Our comprehensive sexuality education, called Our Whole Lives, or OWL, spans from kindergarten through adulthood and is offered in age-appropriate sessions. This education is critical to understanding that our bodies are whole and holy and entirely ours. One of the contributing factors to child abuse is ignorance, when a child doesn't even know the difference between good touch and bad touch, or about who can touch them and not. They are left more vulnerable to predators. A child needs to have a choice about who touches them, and we empower them when we give them those choices at the earliest of ages. A child who is respected and educated can set some boundaries and knows when to call out for help. OWL is one of our best defenses against sexual abuse and ensures that our children will have positive feelings about their own bodies. Respect and responsibility can be taught along with accurate information and the trust that that engenders. When parents and other adults don't tell you the whole truth about your body and your sexuality, why would you trust them when you have a difficult situation or questions that you need answered? Next year, our family ministry program is offering 3 sessions of OWL, a full year for 8th and 9th grades, and 6-week sessions for the intermediate 5th, 6th grade, and the littlest kindergartner and first grades. This is an opportunity to spread our Unitarian Universalist values and to protect not only our children, but all children. I encourage you to invite anyone you know to sign up for these life-changing classes. They are open to the community. OWL is a part of a broader perspective on reproductive justice that calls us to respect women's choices about their bodies. In a real-life situation, a choice about sexual activity, birth control, or carrying a pregnancy and raising a child is a deeply personal and far more complicated question than you might think. In an article on reproductive justice in the UU World, Darcy Baxter tells this story. She says into the phone, "I know this is going to sound crazy, but it's the only thing I can think of right now. There's a Unitarian Universalist church 100 miles from you. Give them a call." This was not the typical advice we gave to women calling our national abortion hotline. Melissa lived in a big Midwestern state, and she had little money, 2 kids, and an unplanned pregnancy. The closest abortion provider was over 500 miles away. Even though Melissa was enrolled in Medicaid, both federal and local government forbade using tax dollars for abortion services. Things were looking pretty bad for her, and in that moment of desperation, a moment all too common among my hotline experiences, I told Melissa to go to church. I'm really not kidding. Call them, I said. Tell them you just talked to this abortion hotline and the counselor you spoke to was a Unitarian and told you to call. It sounds crazy, but this church is not like a lot of other churches. It's part of our tradition that we support women. Maybe there's a doctor in the congregation. Maybe someone in the congregation knows somebody. After I hung up the phone, another counselor peeked over the cubicle divider and looked at me kind of strangely. "Did you just send that woman to church to get help with an abortion?" Yes, yes, I did. While Melissa theoretically had a right, in practice, she did not have access to the means that could make that right a reality. Reproductive justice is a movement that calls on us to focus on women's lived realities and the complex interdependent web of circumstances that must exist for her to exercise what we call rights. Yes, of course, women need legal rights to abortion, but we need a lot more than that in order to make an honest-to-God choice. To be truthful, even if Melissa had access to an abortion, I do not know if she would really have had a choice. I'm not so sure Melissa would have been considering an abortion had she known she would have the basic resources to raise her child well. The number one reason cited by the women I counseled for having an abortion was money. What would have given Melissa a real choice? The guarantee of good childcare, a safe neighborhood, quality health care, and good education for her child. So these days, as abortion rights are under increasing attack and even less accessible than when that article was written, Unitarian Universalist congregations are going to be called upon again to embrace the whole complex need for reproductive justice. You know, I struggle, and I just cannot align the values stated in our first principle with forcing an unwilling woman to carry a pregnancy, to give birth, and raise a child knowing that they do not have the means and the willingness and the heart to support doing that in this terrible world. In my ideal world, abortion would be less and less necessary because of the availability of effective birth control and all the supports a family needs along the way to raise a child. This world we inhabit today is far from that ideal. So I am starting to call myself something I hear other people calling themselves, pro-life and pro-choice. Peggy Clark describes it here. She says, "I'm pro-life. I believe in decreasing a need for abortions. I believe in access to health care for everyone. I believe in feeding infants and children. I believe in increasing access to education. I believe in keeping immigrant children with their parents. I believe in taking guns off the streets. I believe in shrinking our military. I believe in ending mass incarceration. I believe in ending the death penalty. I believe in providing safe housing for everyone. I believe in guaranteeing a living wage for all workers. I believe in free long-term care for the elderly. I support all of these things that support the greatest life for the largest number of people. Therefore, I am pro-life and pro-choice. A person's right to bodily integrity and respect weighs heavily in these moral arguments. If we are to claim being for life, it has to be for all of life in all of its many stages and circumstances. Our concern for all of it means respecting the many and diverse ways that life calls us out to live with integrity and a deeper sense of justice. We have to show up for the times when we fall short and make a mistake, like getting pregnant again when we didn't mean to, as well as protect the victims of rape and incest from the horrors they have already endured. When speaking with a nurse and midwife about this issue, she said something important for all of us to hear. She said, "You need to know, no abortion provider takes joy in their work. They are there to provide a service when all other means have failed. The potential life that a fetus represents is filled with promise that is now denied, and it is a loss. Ending a pregnancy is always a difficult choice to make, which is why we need to work harder at preventing unwanted pregnancy in the first place. The feelings are complex and deeply personal. We cannot know all that a given woman knows as she makes these decisions about her own body and her own life. Access for all to education and healthcare and family resources is an integral part of the reproductive justice that is our goal. Meanwhile, we may be seeing more folks who need real help right now. I plan to be here to greet them warmly and offer what help I can. Darcy Baxter says a little more about why she sent Melissa to her local UU congregation. That day on the phone, in the midst of the culture wars, I did not think twice about sending Melissa to the closest Unitarian Universalist congregation. I did not think twice about urging her to go to church. Why? I did not think twice because, for me, church was the only place my parents could send me to get a high-quality, comprehensive sexuality education. I did not think twice because while I was growing up, my minister told stories of being part of the clergy consultation service on abortion, a pre-Roe v. Wade network of Protestant and Jewish clergy who connected women with safe abortions. I do not think twice because Unitarian Universalists, Jews, and Buddhists have been even more supportive of legal abortion than those who identify themselves as religiously unaffiliated. I do not think twice because Roe v. Wade was forged in the basement of First Unitarian Church of Dallas, Texas. So when it comes to the issue of reproductive rights and bodily integrity, we Unitarian Universalists have clearly claimed our holy ground. We side with love, with LGBTQ rights and women's rights, for a person's right to grow up free and safe to be who they need to be, for all children of every race, gender, and economic status. The violations and colonizing of other bodies can only cease with the use of these soft weapons of respect and accountability. Decision-making about our bodies, our sexuality, our families demands the safe space we can only create by showing up for one another in those complicated spaces where real life happens. May the life we choose flourish under our watch. May what we know in our own muscles and sinews be honored as true and good. May life find a way, with the hand of compassion and justice guiding us in these difficult and precious days. May it be so.